And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
Proceedings in the trial against Finnish MP Pavi Räsänen and Bishop Johanna Pohjola of the Evangelical Lutheran Mission Diocese of Finland, the ELMDF, continued on February the 14th, with the prosecution and the defence making their closing statements. The main idea of the prosecutor seems to be that the Bible should not be taught in its own right in public, and that freedom of religion does not allow permission to speak out loud if what is said is considered to discriminate against a minority group, commented Bishop Pohjola, following the prosecution's closing statement. In this view, biblical teachings on marriage, sexuality, sin, and mercy could not be proclaimed publicly. This is an attack on religious freedom. The two are on trial for their articulation of historic Christian teaching on human sexuality. Dr. Räsänen is charged for authoring a 2004 booklet entitled Male and Female, He Created Them, Homosexual Relationships Challenge the Christian Concept of Humanity. And Bishop Pohjola is charged for publishing the work. Dr. Räsänen also faces two other charges, including for criticizing Finland's National Lutheran Church, of which she is a member, for its support of Helsinki Pride in a tweet that included an image of a Bible verse from Romans 1:24-27. The Prosecutor General has requested that the court impose the maximum criminal victim compensation on Dr. Räsänen, valued at 120 days of personal income. The prosecution requests Bishop Pohjola be directed to provide compensation equivalent to 60 days of personal income. The prosecution has further requested a corporate fine of €10,000 against the ELMDF's legal entity, the Luther Foundation. The court will announce its verdict on March the 30th. The decision to put the two on trial has led to an international outcry, with many calling it an attack on religious freedom. The International Lutheran Council, the ILC, of which the ELMDF is a member, was among those expressing serious concern about the decision to charge Bishop Pohjola and Dr. Räsänen and encouraging prayer for them. The trial began on January the 24th. In her opening remarks, the Prosecutor General suggested that the trial was in no way about the Bible, but over the course of her presentation and throughout her argumentation and questioning, she turned repeatedly to discussions of the nature of Scripture, the defendant's hermeneutics, and the Christian understanding of sin. I assume the prosecutor would not go into this matter of the Bible and theology, noted Bishop Pohjola in an interview with Studio Crypta, a media program of the ELMDF, following the first court date. I thought that this would be a cold, judicial handling of these matters. In that, I was truly surprised. Although she stated this was not about the Bible or about freedom of religions or opinions, he continued, she went quite deeply into theological issues. The prosecutor questioned the bishop on his understanding of the relationship between the Old and New Testaments, the status of biblical and civil law, and so forth, a conflation of juridical and theological argumentation, which seemed remarkable in a civil court. Worse, Bishop Pohjola said, was a prosecutor's attempt to link those who accept historic Christian teaching on sexuality with those who would kill or rape in the name of religion. Regarding the booklet itself, Dr. Räsänen suggested in the same interview with Studio Crypta that the prosecution had to cherry-pick pieces here and there, dealing only with peripheral matters, while ignoring the central teachings of the booklet in order to justify the charges. What I grasped there in the trial, and actually even before it, was what a weak basis they had to proceed to trial. What the state prosecutor read out as charges, what she stated was written in the booklet, was untrue. Those statements were not found there, not on the radio program, not in the booklet, nor in the tweet. Bishop Pohjola concurred, I was puzzled when the prosecutor read out the charges, he said. The prosecution accused Dr. Räsänen of having called homosexuals paedophiles, saying they arose from genetic error, and even suggesting they were not created by God. The defendants rejected all of the charges as completely false, noting that they were directly contradicted in the booklet and other public statements. Instead, Bishop Pohjola argued, the booklet explains that, while historic Christian teaching considers homosexual acts to be sinful on the basis of Scripture, Christians do not therefore consider homosexuals any different than any other person before God. All are of equal worth, and all are under sin, and all are under grace, he explained. We have all the same position before God. We want to say that homosexuals with these tendencies are welcome in our churches, to live in contact with Christ, and to find their identity, just as each of us should find our identity as a creation of God, redeemed by Jesus Christ. In the prosecutor's mind, these statements are of no importance, not believable, Bishop Poyala lamented, but these are the big picture, the entire bedrock on which we Christians stand. We denounce all improper and violent and inflammatory speech, he said simply, but the basic Christian preaching of the law and gospel is not that. While admitting to feeling nervous in the lead-up to the trial, Dr. Rassen said she went into court with a calm mind. I went there trusting God, she explained. I have felt very strongly ever since that tweet I wrote that this matter is in God's hands and under his guidance, so that is the path I must take. Thomas Cromwell may be responsible for the first ever use of cut and paste as he tried to rewrite his own history in 1539, Cambridge historians have suggested. As Henry VIII's chief minister, Cromwell was one of the strongest proponents of the English Reformation and ordered two lavish copies of the Great Bible to be made, one for Henry and one for himself. Both were printed on parchment in France, and their illustrations were coloured by hand before being sent over to England. But the political mood was tense at the time, and sensing that Henry was having reservations about splitting from the Catholic Church, it has now emerged that Cromwell intercepted the books and altered some of the images in an effort to distance himself from the campaign. Cromwell's copy had been in the historic library of St. John's College, Cambridge, since the 17th century, but its secrets have only now been uncovered by historian Dr. E.L. Poleg from Queen Mary University of London and senior research scientist Dr. Paola Ricciardi from the University of Cambridge's Fitzwilliam Museum. The iconic title page of the Great Bible shows Henry handing copies of the Bible to Cromwell and to Thomas Cranmer, the Archbishop of Canterbury. Cranmer and a man long assumed to be Cromwell are shown distributing the book to clergymen and lay nobility. But researchers discovered the faces of the men receiving and giving Bibles were painted on separate pieces of vellum and expertly pasted over the original printed portraits, so that Cromwell is no longer depicted distributing the book. Instead, he is now being given the Bible by Henry, while in the second image his face has been pasted over with that of another of the king's close advisers, thought to be Richard Rich. Dr. Poleg was examining the Great Bible as part of a research project. He is the author of three books on the role of the Bible in medieval England and has a publication called A Material History of the Bible, England 1200 to 1553, due out next month. To get a closer look at Cromwell's Bible, he asked Dr. Ricciardi to use an X-ray spectrometer and digital microscope to analyse the paint pigment, and she realised that there were small vellum patches on the parchment. Dr. Poleg believes the change was made to shore up Cromwell's position with Henry, who still had doubts about the move towards Protestantism. In the original title page, Cromwell is associating himself with the person distributing Bibles. This was a very dangerous position to be in, because Henry was not fully supportive of the new Bible, he said. Cromwell realised this, so he tweaked the images to place himself receiving a Bible from Henry. He would have employed an artist to add in a portrait of himself receiving the Bible from Henry. It's been done so professionally that a microscope and a good light source are needed to see it. It's painted on a separate piece of vellum and then glued on. The artistry is all the more incredible because, according to Dr. Ricciardi, we did not know that the Tudors were doing cut and stick repairs to the Bible at that time. There is a long tradition from medieval times of copying images from one book and sticking them into another. But that's a whole image. This is to cover something up and hide it. So yes, this would be the first report of someone sticking a face on top of a body that was already there, she told the Sunday Telegraph. This makes it the last known portrait of Cromwell before his execution. Cromwell was often seen as a reformer who moved the country very ardently in the direction of Anglicanism, and here he is shown as someone who understands politics very well and actually tries to position himself in the right location, said Dr. Poleg. He is very much aware of Henry's hesitation regarding the Bible and is very good at playing the political game. This adds to our growing understanding of Cromwell and the uncertain course of English Reformation. The production of the Bible took probably over a year, and as time went on, he realised that's not a comfortable position for him to be in, so he airbrushes it, added Dr. Ricciardi. A second dramatic change to the title page was the inclusion of Henry's beloved wife, Jane Seymour, who had died in 1537, days after giving birth to his longed-for male heir, Edward. Her picture was painted over the original illustration of a woman surrounded by children. Jane's dress is white with a silver lining, and she is wearing a red headdress. A necklace of gold leaf completes the transformation. Dr. Pollack said, "The page was manipulated to present Henry with an image of Jane Seymour. Cromwell was using Jane to persuade the king of the value of the Bible. When the Bible was produced, Jane had recently died, so she was still Henry's beloved queen, and because she had given him birth to their son Edward, putting her in a scene with children makes a lot of sense." The researchers are now hoping to examine the second great Bible, currently in the National Library of Wales, but its title pages are missing, so there could be no like-for-like comparisons. It is thought that Henry never realised the pictures had been doctored to curry favour. But the manipulation of the images did not save Cromwell. He was executed for treason and heresy in 1540 after Henry blamed him for the failure of his marriage to Anne of Cleves. And finally, Pastor Jamie wrangled with a neighbour called Maggie, who never went to church. She always promised to go, but never did. So Pastor Jamie was astounded when she suddenly showed up for Sunday service. Thereafter, Maggie was there every Sunday. 3 months later, Pastor Jamie asked her, "What happened to you? You always dodged church, and now it looks like you can't get enough." Maggie replied, "It's this new car of mine. They told me the warranty will lapse if I miss even one service."
My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.